to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
So we know that elder abuse is grossly underreported, so we must rely on our community to talk with their circles about elder abuse. Asking people how they're doing and being present to listen to someone who is struggling can really go a long way.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, Lane County, and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's June 25th, 2021 program. What's being done about elder abuse? This is the 38th program for our 2020-21 programming year. My name's Kitty Piercy, and I am the City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page, and are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7 on Mondays at 7. In today's program, we welcome Nicole Newell, a manager with Adult Protective Services, Brenton Gicker, a registered nurse with CAHOOTS, and Chief Bob Morris from Junction City Police. Biographical information on our speakers is available on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. I would like to thank Joel Corin for coordinating today's program. World Elder Abuse Awareness Day is recognized annually on June 15. How prevalent is elder abuse locally? And how is it addressed? Multiple surveys of seniors show that up to 15% experience abuse every year. Yet the problem is vastly underreported. With an estimated 70,000 seniors in Lane County, elder abuse likely affects someone you know, but remains largely hidden. In this program, Nicole Newell, manager with Adult Protective Services, Bob Morris, Junction City Police Chief, and Brenton Gicker, RN CAHOOTS, discuss the problems, responses, and interventions available for addressing elder abuse in our community. They describe how each agency responds to the concerns and how the agencies collaborate and how each of us can help with this problem.
All right, thank you so much for having me today. June is World Elder Abuse Awareness Month, and our team here is really interested in doing our part to raise community awareness and increase prevention. I've been with the APS unit for nearly 7 years, and each year I have really recognized an increase in reported and substantiated abuse. The reason we wanted to present today with two community partners is to give you all a better understanding of the individual work we do, as well as how we collaborate together to increase safety in Lane County. We want to make sure our community knows who and how to call when they run into situations with their friends, neighbors, and loved ones. So to start, Adult Protective Services embraces a social model of intervention with a primary focus on offering safety and protection to the alleged victim or person of concern. We are civil investigators, not law enforcement. That's where our friend Chief Morris comes in. We fact find to determine if abuse has occurred, but we're also really driven by working with clients to establish safety plans that are person-centered and focused on harm reduction. We are tasked with balancing safety with an individual's right to self-determination, which can be pretty tricky. Adult Protective Services has 9 abuse types, with the most common being financial abuse and self-neglect. For those of you who are unfamiliar, self-neglect is a situation where someone is confused with a possibly with dementia or Alzheimer's and doesn't recognize the danger or harm that occurs related to that confusion. For someone to be eligible for our services, they must be age 65 or older, or an individual who identifies with a physical disability that prevents themselves from protection. We complete abuse investigations in both facility and community settings. So for facilities, those would be adult foster homes, assisted living facilities, residential care facilities, and memory care. We do not do nursing facilities. Those are federally funded and federally regulated. And then community settings would be an individual's home or wherever our victim is residing. It's also important to note that we cover all of Lane County, not just the metro area. So to give you a little more context into why our work is important, the World Health Organization statistics show that in 2019, around 1 in 6 people 60 years and older experienced some form of abuse in community settings. However, that same year, they believe that only 1 in 24 cases were actually reported. So that means that we all likely have individuals in our circles that have experienced some sort of undisclosed abuse and are potentially struggling in silence. To give you some local perspective on statistics, Lane County APS completed 5,554 screenings or calls of abuse from July 2019 to July 2020. Of those 5,500 calls, 2,214 cases were assigned for abuse investigations. Of those assigned abuse investigations, 22% of them were found to be substantiated, meaning that abuse or neglect occurred. Elder abuse in and of itself can lead to serious physical injuries and long-term psychological consequences on a group of individuals who are more likely to be isolated to begin with. We also know that elder abuse is extremely expensive. In 2010, a study from Virginia Tech estimated $2.9 billion loss by seniors to financial exploitation. And that was kind of the low end of estimates, with some of the studies suggesting up to $36 billion nationally per year. So after an investigator meets an alleged victim, as I mentioned before, we try to implement safety plans and interventions that not only support the individual's immediate and long-term needs, but we also do our best to help prevent abuse from happening in the future. In my time doing this work, I have found that the best safety plans and interventions are really when we can have a community response. We rely pretty heavily on our community partners to not only call us when they become aware of abuse, but we also work together to increase safety. I have hundreds of case-specific examples where CAHOOTS or police called us to inform us of a situation and vice versa, me calling them to seek their assistance and support for an individual. At APS, we so appreciate the collaboration and referrals because we know we are barely scratching the surface in reaching vulnerable seniors. The official 2020 census numbers are coming, but the most recent estimates I could find indicated that Lane County has more than 70,000 seniors. So in our last fiscal year, we only investigated 2,214 cases. That tells us that we're probably missing quite a bit of people. The best part about our collaboration is that we all have a different approach and goal when working with an individual. So to give you kind of an example, let's say a self-neglect situation, we might get a call from CAHOOTS or police informing us of an individual who is living alone and a neighbor found them confused and in the middle of the street. The neighbor knew to call non-emergency police, who then dispatched CAHOOTS or officers to assess the situation. They were able to get the individual safe for a night, but then they have to leave for their next call. So from that initial neighbor call, you know, they didn't know about APS, so they called police, but we will likely get our own referral. They will cross-report it to us, either CAHOOTS or police, whoever was out, so we can go out and meet the individual. From there, we can do our own cognitive and risk assessment and help them maybe set up delivered meals on wheels, connect with their doctor around medical changes, and kind of reach out to their own community to increase in-person supports. CAHOOTS or police will address the initial kind of in-the-moment needs, but we can come in and investigate the concerns and work to implement more long-term solutions for safety. The same can be said about all abuse types that get us to the door. So we might go out on an allegation of a verbal abuse call by an adult child. And when we go out and meet that individual, we might find that they have numerous unmet needs that are completely unrelated to the reason we got called. So we are not ongoing case managers, but we do our best to build rapport with individuals, understand their story and struggles, and see if there's anything we can do to help support their ongoing health and safety. Before we move on to hear from the other two speakers, I just kind of want to emphasize everyone's part in reducing elder abuse. So we know that elder abuse is grossly underreported, so we must rely on our community to talk with their circles about elder abuse. asking people how they're doing and being present to listen to someone who is struggling can really go a long way. Then call us. Call us if you know things are happening. Call us if you think something seems off. Maybe somebody has had a change of baseline. Maybe the person is no longer as interested in doing the things that were really important to them. Or maybe somebody presents as fearful to disclose information to you. Our phone lines are open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. If your concern doesn't quite meet the definition of abuse, which allows us to assign an investigation, we will do our best to provide the caller with the resources or ideas that might meet their needs. So our Lane County number is 541-682-4140. And our statewide number is 1-855-503-SAFE. We have also put on a few trainings this month that take a deeper dive into our work. If you're interested in learning more about elder abuse and the work Adult Protective Service specifically does, you can visit our website at lcog.org for access to recorded training. So I think next we'll move on to Brenton Gicker from Cahoots.
So my name is Brenton Gicker. I'm a EMT, and for those of you who don't know, Cahoots is a program of Whitebird Clinic, which is a social service that's been around for, I think, about 50 years. And Cahoots is kind of a mobile wing of Whitebird. We are a mobile crisis intervention team that is staffed by counselors and nurses and EMTs. And we handle a significant portion of the non-emergency and non-criminal calls for service in the Eugene Springfield area. So basically, we're a kind of a medical, mental health, social service team that handles calls that would otherwise go to the police or the fire department. And we also respond to calls with the police and the fire department. We our focus is on psychosocial issues. So a lot of calls involving people having mental health problems or failure to thrive kind of problems, substance abuse problems, that kind of thing. A lot of those calls will get routed to us instead of the police or the fire department. As far as the elderly population, you know, elderly people can call us just like, you know, people from any age group or any walk of life can call us for certain types of problems. But a lot of times when we interface with the elderly population and when we end up making calls to Adult Protective Services are following welfare check type calls like Nicole described. So for example, somebody might notice that their neighbor, their elderly neighbor has been acting strangely, or that they have been their hygiene has been really poor. Maybe their mail is piling up, or newspapers are piling up, or somebody might notice that something's wrong and or something seems concerning, and they're not sure who to call. So in the Eugene Springfield area, if you call the, you know, if you call 911 or you call the non-emergency police line, those types of calls might get routed to us, and then we get dispatched to come and check on the person and see how they're doing. In some cases, they're doing fine. In some cases, they're, you know, we do encounter people that have, you know, fallen and broken their hips and that kind of thing. We do sometimes find people deceased. Sometimes we find people that are sick or maybe, you know, are going through some kind of decline. I think one of the more special parts of the job is that just like we may be one of the first agencies to work with a young person who is having their first symptoms of major mental illness, we might also be one of the first agencies to encounter an older person who's having their some kind of life-changing event, whether it's, you know, they're developing dementia or, you know, they're becoming unable to care for themselves. So we might be one of the first points of contact, and we come out and assess things. And in some cases, we take people to the emergency room. In some cases, we just, you know, check on the person, and, you know, depending on what they want and what they need, you know, we might call Adult Protective Services for follow-up. In rare cases, you know, we encounter people that are in such bad conditions that we, you know, end up calling, you know, an ambulance for them, that kind of thing. But as far as, yeah, the elderly population, a lot of our, you know, kind of most important interventions with them start with a welfare check. Somebody, whether it's a doctor's office, a neighbor, a family member, calling because they're concerned about somebody, we get sent out get to assess them mentally and physically and assess their circumstances and try to connect them with the right resources from there. I think that's all I've got for now.
I think next we have Chief Bob Morris from Junction City.
Thanks, Nicole. I appreciate the opportunity to participate. You and I have worked together on a number of different events. And from a law enforcement perspective, you had explained that you're a civil investigator. You investigate civil-related incidents. The law enforcement community investigates criminal. And a lot of the public doesn't understand the difference. They call very oftentimes with civil matters that we can't do anything about. Law enforcement, we investigate criminal laws. Those are laws that are enacted by the state legislature, and we are the ones that are responsible for investigating those, whether it be a traffic crash or whether it be a home burglary or something like that. As it relates to the senior community, what we're looking at are crimes of elder abuse, neglect, criminal mistreatment, as well as the entire other array of crimes from assault to rape, to harassment, to disorderly conduct, a lot of different things like that. So the law enforcement community has a responsibility to the elder community to protect them just as we would any other vulnerable population, as well as the rest of society. So very frequently what happens, we will get a call either from a neighbor or from APS or a concerned relative that thinks that their friend or their grandmother or their aunt or whatever relative is acting differently, or very frequently they just haven't heard from them in a number of days, which is out of the norm for that person. So law enforcement goes out, tries to make contact at the residence and establish if the person is okay. Very frequently when you're dealing with the senior community, they don't understand technology. They've been given cell phones by their family. They don't know how to use them. And oftentimes the ringer is just simply shut off, or they didn't hear it, or there was some other kind of a technical issue where they couldn't answer the phone. There wasn't a medical issue. There wasn't anything wrong. They just didn't understand the technology. But while we are out there, we will also try and visit with the person, establish that they do have the mental capacity to care for themselves, that they've got the ability to call for help if they need it, as well as who's caring for them. Are they caring for themselves? Is their food in the refrigerator? Is it outdated? Do you have mold in there? Do you have milk that's been in there for 2 months? We're gonna look at that kind of a setting. So we're gonna take kind of an initial look at the environment. Is the place clean? Is it safe? Is it free from trip hazards and that type of thing? So what we're doing, from what we call a community caretaking standpoint, is we're looking at a much bigger picture. We got a call that the person had not been heard from in a certain amount of time. We will go out there, one, make sure that they are okay, that they haven't succumbed to some kind of an injury, or that they're laying there in an injured state and can't get to a phone, or if somebody's abusing them. But beyond that, we're going to take a look around the house. Does the house look safe? Is there power that's on? Do they have the phone service? Has the phone service been disconnected? Do they have adequate food? Can they get to that food? Do they have medical transport? Do they have a way to get to the doctor? That type of thing. So from an initial standpoint, we're going to take a look at a much bigger holistic picture as to what's going on with this person, and can we connect them with services that would help them if they aren't in an abusive situation. One of the things that a lot of people don't understand is that you think of hypothermia and people think cold, they think they're out up skiing and somebody gets outside and it's, you know, 30, 20, 15 degrees outside and they get hypothermia from that. Very frequently, we will find seniors that are hypothermic and in need of medical care and they don't even realize it. But the average room temperature at which the elderly person becomes hypothermic is a frigid 68 or 70 degrees. So what's comfortable for you and I isn't necessarily comfortable for somebody who's not ambulatory. By that, I mean that they're not able to get up and move around. They're not going out and talking with people. They're not going to the store. They're just sitting there sedentary. And because of that, their ability to thermoregulate or control their body temperature is compromised by their age and lack of physical activity. So when we go into a house, just because it feels comfortable to us at 68 or 70 degrees, well, oftentimes we'll touch their skin to see if they're really, really cold and take a look at it from a medical stability standpoint. Do they need to be seen by medics and then subsequently maybe followed up with physicians? Do they need emergency treatment? So if you've got friends, if you've got relatives, you've got neighbors that are elderly, it's really good for the community to watch out for those people and just interact with them, visit with them, check in with them, determine what their day-to-day pattern is. So if something looks out of ordinary, they pick up on it very rapidly as opposed to not catching it for a couple of days or longer. So let's get into a situation where there is maybe abuse. So we'll go out, the person hasn't been heard from, we'll talk to them, we'll start visiting, and they've got a son, a daughter, a friend, somebody that has stepped up and said, we'll care for you. But the problem is, you look around the house, it's a very dirty environment, there's a lot of trip hazards, there's a lot of things that are going to be unsafe for the person. Maybe their medication hasn't been refilled for 2, 3, 4 months, but yet this person is there, oftentimes receiving compensation to care for them, but they're not doing it. Got the other thing where they've got access to the person. Maybe the person suffers from some kind of a dementia, some kind of a incapacity to actually cognitively think through things. They don't understand what's happening around them. And the person who is their caretaker is actually taking from them, they're stealing from their bank accounts and that type of thing. At that point, when we've got probable cause to believe or reasonable suspicion to believe that something is up, we're going to start looking at it from the criminal investigation standpoint. We're going to open a formal investigation and we're going to start interviewing the relatives. We're going to interview the person who's the subject of this, who may be classed as a victim, depending on what we find. And we're going to talk to the neighbors, we're going to try to get access to bank accounts, and we're going to start looking around trying to see exactly what's happening. Do we have an elder abuse case that's financial? We've also got people who are physically abused, both physically, like just from an assault. We've gone into care facilities, foster homes and stuff like that, where the person that we're checking on has bruise marks where you've got the imprint of a hand on the person's arm. Seniors oftentimes bruise easier than younger individuals. And so when somebody grabs a hold of them, they may leave a handprint. That handprint may be justified if they were trying to catch the person from a fall, but that's how we start looking at it. We look at it with a very suspect thought in mind as to what's happened here. At the same time that we are investigating it, we're going to notify your agency, APS, and let you guys know that we have an active criminal investigation going on and that we enlist you guys to help. And you can start looking at it from the civil side, trying to help determine, has there been an abuse situation that you would sustain? And there are times that your agency may sustain something that is an abuse, while at the same time, we don't really find enough there to proceed criminally. You may have some tools that we don't have where you can go after the situation from a civil standpoint and take some kind of action and get the person the help that they need. Once we determine that there is a crime that has occurred and that we have identified a suspect, and we've got probable cause based on our investigation to believe that that person committed that crime, whatever that crime was, what we are going to do is then make an arrest, and we're going to type up our reports and combine them with your reports and send them to the district attorney's office, who will then make a decision if they're going to proceed with prosecution. Again, just because we find that there's probable cause or you determine that you've got a sustained abuse situation does not mean that the district attorney's office is actually going to pursue prosecution. And that is a decision that is left up to the DA's office. A lot of people get frustrated with that because they say, well, law enforcement didn't do anything, APS didn't do anything. Just as you have limits and law enforcement has limits, so too has the DA's office has constraints that they have to operate within. So it's not that your agency isn't doing something or our law enforcement isn't doing something. It's the fact that the DA has looked at it and based on case law, based on the totality of the circumstances, the district attorney's office feels it's not in their best interest to proceed with prosecution. And at that point, the case is going to be suspended. But the APS is going to continue to be involved and follow on and try and make sure that this person is connected with the resources that will best serve them and help them live a safe and happy, healthy life.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our Facebook page for more topics. We hope you are inspired to join us for our next podcast episode.